Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the Intelligent Design the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting from Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. Today we have on the phone with us Professor Brad Monten, Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Colorado Boulder, who has written a number of articles and has written a book on intelligent design and comes at it from a very interesting and unique perspective. Before we get going, I want to note that Professor Monten will be debating intelligent design and the existence of God this coming Friday, November 7th in Fort Worth, Texas at the Will Rogers Auditorium, and then also on Saturday, November 8th at the St. Andrew's Episcopal Church, also in Fort Worth, Texas. And on the pro-ID side of this debate will be, as it turns out, two non-theists, Professor Monten and David Berlinski, and then on the anti-ID side will be Dennis Alexander and Lawrence Krauss. If you'd like more information about attending the debate, visit idthefuture.com, and we'll have that information up there for you. So go check it out Friday and Saturday in Fort Worth, Texas, Intelligent Design and the Existence of God, and the information's at idthefuture.com if you'd like to attend. So Professor Monten, thank you so much for joining us on the ID of the Future podcast today.
You're welcome.
I'd like for our listeners to first get to know you a little bit. Some of our listeners who follow the ID debate might know your name and might have followed your work. Others who even follow it closely might not have heard of you, and I really hope that that will change in the future. Just to give a little background, I first discovered you, Professor Monten, a couple years ago when I was working on a Law Review article that ended up being published in Montana Law Review that was reviewing the Kitzmiller ruling. And as I was writing on it, I was doing some research on philosophy of science, particularly philosophers who have made the argument that something doesn't have to be correct for it to be scientific, that you could be scientific and you could yet be wrong. And in doing that research on the internet, I came across an article you had written about the constitutionality of teaching intelligent design, and you were critiquing Judge Jones' arguments that an idea is not science, and I found your viewpoint to be very refreshing and very compelling, and it happened to cohere with some of the arguments that we were making, and so we ended up citing your work quite a bit in our Law Review article, which I enjoyed reading very much. So, Professor Monten, I'd love for our listeners to get to know you a little bit. So, could you first give us a little bit of background? Just what is your educational background, and sort of where do you come from intellectually in this debate?
Sure, I am an atheist, which would most people would think that that would mean that would be a virulent anti-intelligent design. And I'm not. I actually find some of the intelligent design arguments at least somewhat plausible and worth taking seriously within academia. And I'm unhappy with the sort of unfair and false criticisms that a lot of my fellow philosophers and academics have given of intelligent design. I'm also, for the record, unhappy with some of the intelligent design arguments. I think that even though some of them are wrong, they could actually be given better than current intelligent design proponents are giving them. So I'm trying really to like elevate the debate on both sides. I got interested in these issues through my background in philosophy of physics, actually. I got a PhD from Princeton in 1999 in philosophy, specializing in philosophy of physics. And then I got interested in probability theory, and I can't remember how I first came across it, but I started, reading about the fine-tuning argument as an argument for the existence of God or some sort of cosmic designer that is a probabilistic physics-based argument. And so I, was unhappy with what both sides of the argument were saying, and so I wrote this paper called God, Fine-Tuning, and the Problem of Old Evidence, which is available on my website, which is bradleymonten.com. And in that paper, I tried to say that the fine-tuning argument was a somewhat plausible argument, but not an argument that would like force one to believe in God or some sort of cosmic designer. And from there, I got interested in science-based arguments for the existence of God more generally, and that, of course, led me into the whole intelligent design literature.
So you did your PhD in philosophy at Princeton, and you focused on, you said, philosophy of physics. Could you maybe tell us a bit more about what you studied in your PhD?
Yeah, there I was working on philosophy of quantum mechanics, particularly like what quantum mechanics basically says strange things about the way the world is, but different versions of quantum mechanics, different interpretations of quantum mechanics say different things about how the world is strange. And obviously one could get more specific, but that's the basic idea. And so my dissertation was basically going through different versions of quantum mechanics and trying to figure out exactly what they're saying about the world and exactly how observers are represented in the theory.
So when you're at a dinner party trying to describe somebody while you're studying your PhD, is that sort of how you boil it down? Because I know another person like you who studied philosophy of physics. Actually, it's Bruce Gordon here at the Discovery Institute. And I got to say, I mean, it is one of the most intellectual heavyweight subjects I think you can wade into. So
yeah. I'm certainly glad I'm doing it. I mean, I went into, you know, physics as an undergraduate thinking that I wanted to discover fundamental truths about the nature of the world. Mm. And I didn't even know what philosophy was. And then when I was a freshman, I took a humanities class and we read the Book of Job as part of this interdisciplinary humanities class. And my professor in that class took the opportunity to tell us about the sort of standard philosophical arguments for and against the existence of God. And that was my first introduction to philosophy, and I was hooked, and I still think that that's like one of the most important issues that philosophers could discuss.
Mm.
Because obviously, whether God exists or not is like a fundamentally important issue in terms of how to understand the world. Maybe, I mean, it can be an important issue in terms of how you live your life, right? If you're a Christian versus an atheist, you're, you know, hopefully going to live your life differently.
Well, I don't know. But I mean, I'm sure you as an atheist would I'm sure like to say that atheists tend to be moral people, and I certainly have known many atheists. Yeah. yeah. I mean, I have known many atheists who were very, very moral people. So, you know, I certainly am not somebody who says that if you become an atheist somehow you know. But you know what I'm saying.
For the record, I believe in objective morality, even though I'm an atheist, and I can give you my quick argument as to why, if you want to hear that. But what I was thinking of is that there are some people who call themselves Christians, but they're sort of like CE Christians. You know, they go to church on Christmas and Easter, and that's about it.
Sure.
And then there are other people, you know, who go on mission trips and try to proselytize and, you know, and take this sort of worldview that Christianity provides really seriously and work to try to understand that worldview better and work to, you know, do apologetics for that worldview. I guess maybe this is just my personal statement of what I'm like, but if I were to be a Christian, I would be a Christian like that, you know, mm-hmm. where I would be like defending the worldview. I would join the Discovery Institute.
Well, we have non-Christians here as well, believe it or not. There are folks who are agnostics that are involved with the ID issue here at Discovery, but I can definitely appreciate what you say. I think that, you know, and I think that we can find some common ground here that, you know, there are people of many worldviews who kind of don't think about the bigger picture issues in life. They kind of skate through not asking the hard questions, not wanting the hard questions to influence the way they live their lives, not really seeking to sort of better themselves through a lot of self-introspection. I think that there are people in many worldviews who do that and people in many worldviews who don't do that. In some ways, I feel more kinship with the atheist who is very self-introspective and takes these issues very seriously than I do myself being a Christian, than I do with the Christian who just doesn't care about these bigger picture questions. And as you said, goes to church twice a year and just doesn't think very much about these kind of things. So I enjoy these debates, as I'm sure you do as well.
Yeah, so I appreciate your attitude there. That's consilient with mine. And that's this whole all explains why I'm interested in the intelligent design debate, because even though I'm an atheist, I'm not absolutely certain of my atheism. I think that, you know, one can call oneself an atheist without being like absolutely dogmatic, without being willing to bet one's life for a penny that atheism is true. Just as, you know, I know theists who have doubts. Mother Teresa had doubts. Mm-hmm. Al Plantinga, who's a friend of mine, and as people probably know, a famous Christian philosopher, he has doubts sometimes. But, you know, these people are still theists, and the atheists can similarly believe that God doesn't exist without being absolutely certain that God doesn't exist.
What do you think happens when a person tries to pretend that they're is no reason or room for any doubt or self-introspection in their worldview?
Yeah. I think that leads to dogmatism in part and this sort of emotional reaction to the people who are on the other side. Because if you think that the other side is just completely, you know, has nothing going for it, then you're going to, you know, dismiss them and react badly to them. And it's unfortunate, you know, and I appreciate the people who aren't that way. And unfortunately, what I've been encountering lately are more atheists who seem to be completely incredibly dogmatic about their view, and then, at least in my personal experience, I've been encountering Christians who are more sympathetic. Like, I recently came across, for example, William Lane Craig, and his he has a Q&A section on his webpage, where he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said, it was question number 72, if you want to look it up, he basically said, atheism is not an implausible worldview. So this is, you know, Craig, one of the preeminent Christian apologists, saying atheism is not an implausible worldview. But then his reason for saying that is he was saying, so that doesn't explain why these atheists are giving such bad arguments and being so emotional about it. You know, they should be able to just give, you know, plausible arguments for atheism, but in fact they're not. They're getting, you know, all upset and not giving arguments.
I find your perspective very interesting, Professor Montan. I'm interested in this debate. I'm supposed to be interviewing you, but you've just really sparked my interest here. You know, I'm interested in this debate on many levels. One is just because I personally consider myself a person who is seeking truth and is trying to understand what is the nature of reality. And then as well, I'm interested also in just people and the way that we're built, the way that we approach these kind of issues. And having been on the receiving end of a lot of what you might call the dogmatic name-calling that's out there, you know, I think about that kind of stuff, and I wonder what drives it, what causes it, why do people get so angry? I wrote a blog post earlier this year about how Richard Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss were just really, they had this sort of hate fest on religion where I watched them speak at Stanford back in March, and I said, in many ways, they're coming to resemble the very thing that they claim they hate. And, right. You know, it saddens me because I love a good introspective dialogue and discussion and debate with anybody of any viewpoint. And so that's why, you know, whether they agree with ID or they don't, you know, and when it turns into dogmatism and name calling, it just saddens me. I think that the debate could be so much more interesting and so much more life giving than that.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's you could sort of understand why scientists maybe are that way, at least if you have like the Kuhnian view that there are paradigms and people are practicing normal science. Then within normal science nowadays, you know, it's not appropriate to consider supernatural hypotheses or even the sorts of design hypotheses that the intelligent design people want folks to consider. But within philosophy, I mean, philosophers are used to talking about arguments for and against the existence of God. And it's kind of, you know, it's sort of one of the paradigm issues that philosophers talk about. And so it really surprises me when I get philosophers who are being dogmatic and opposed to me talking about these issues.
Professor Montan, is there anything else you'd like to add just as we close out this first interview?
Yeah, we were in the topic of reactions, the negative reactions I've gotten for trying to discuss these intelligent design issues in a dispassionate, objective manner. I thought it might be interesting to read a part of an email I got from a prominent intelligent design proponent. And I'm not going to mention his name.
Proponent or opponent?
Prominent intelligent design opponent.
Opponent, okay.
Opponent, right. And yeah, I'm not going to mention his name just because it doesn't really matter.
Sure.
Who he is. What's interesting is the attitude that's expressed. So he says, unfortunately, so he read an early draft of my manuscript on intelligent design issues, which we can talk more about. And here's what he said. Unfortunately, in this debate, a position between two sides, which you seem to adopt, is hardly tenable. It is a cultural war whose outcome will have immense consequences. So a book, to be useful, must unequivocally take a side and defend it vigorously. A position of supposed impartiality, which is hardly possible, necessarily serves one side, despite the author's intention to remain unbiased. And I was really disappointed when I got this idea that I have to be on one side or the other, that, you know, this is a cultural war and, you know, one can't take any side other than, you know, one of the two-sided cultural war. That really disappointed me because I'm not working on intelligent design issues to be useful. I'm not working on intelligent design issues to fight a cultural war, even if there is a cultural war, which we can talk about. I'm talking about these intelligent design issues, and I'm thinking about these because I want to get at the truth. I want to know, or at least even if I can't get at the truth, I want to know where the arguments best point. So, you know, I'm not interested in taking one side and defending it vigorously. I'm interested in espousing what I think the right position is. And if I think the right position is somewhere in between, then that's what I'm going to say.
Well, I appreciate your perspective very much, Professor Montan. Folks who have been involved with the legal field have a term for that kind of thinking, that the quote that you just read, it's called outcome-based jurisprudence, where people don't care about the logic or the reasoning that you use to get to your conclusion. They just care about your conclusion, that it's the quote-unquote politically correct, accurate conclusion as far as their own goals and agenda is concerned. Good reasoning and logic and truth are not of primary concern when you do that kind of reasoning. So
right.
In any case, we're going to pick this up in another podcast, talk some more about your own research and the book that you're writing, and maybe even get back into the question of responses to your work and your perspective on those kind of things. So thank you so much, Professor Montan, for this interview.
Thanks, Casey.
This is Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast. Stay tuned for more with Professor Bradley Montan. And don't forget that this weekend, Dr. Montan will be upholding the pro-ID side in a debate over intelligent design and the existence of God in Fort Worth, Texas. Check out idthefuture.com for all the details. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.